Speaking of great BFM things, the name synonymous with BFM by now is Peter Lynham. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, yes indeed.
Well, welcome back to the show. Everyone's very excited to have you. We have a very interesting topic on hand today.
Yes, it's interesting. There is intense interest in traditional Māori religion, and yet there's very, very little authoritative writing on the subject, maybe because it's so very difficult to write about, because most of the reports we have are either, if you like, affected by tradition having held them for such a long period in an oral way,
yes,
that we wonder how much they've been affected by the context, or that they come from hostile sources because the missionaries were inclined to do rather nasty descriptions of the ignorance and paganism.
Oh,
of
right.
Seeing it through a very particular lens. Some bits we know well. We know all about the mythologies, the stories of Māori, the story of the creation of the world, etc.
Mm-hmm.
But how it was practiced is much less certain.
That's so interesting. Have you got any certainty for us?
I mean, we need to start with what we do know.
Yeah.
And the first thing is the tapu, the laws of tapu.
Yeah.
And those are the ones that are they survived. It's very interesting that they did survive the missionary era, because the missionaries were quite hostile to notions of tapu and regularly would breach tapu, and Māori would wait for them to die and regard this as the great testing point of the ancient religion. And much of the failure of the ancient religion probably was because the defiance of tapu by the missionaries was carried out successfully.
Mm.
But tapu came back with a vengeance, of course, very strongly. And today, of course, we'd all know a bit about the parts of the body that one shouldn't touch, the laws about the head, the laws about the dead body, and so on and so forth.
Mm.
And these fit what you might call the traditional model. And this is where I have to be cautious, because this is Māori religion, and I'm not Māori, and I'm describing it in categories that make sense to a student of religious studies.
Mm.
But they could be taken as offensive by Māori, and this makes it a difficult subject for Europeans to approach. But what I would say is that it follows the pattern of, well, you see, the trouble is primitive religion is such a pejorative term, but how should one call it? Indigenous traditional religions throughout the world had notions of sacred and non-sacred in different ways, and they had notions of rites or prayers or priests that could play a role in navigating the relationship between the sacred and the need to get on with life. And in that sense, Māori religion is fairly easy to understand. What's less easy to understand is the way and how the gods were invoked. And there's a massive debate still remains where Māori themselves take different points of view as to whether there was a supreme god in the Māori tradition. Because you know about the traditional gods,
yes,
the so-called departmental gods. But there has been a story associated with students of Māori religion from the 1860s or 70s, that there was a secret knowledge kept by the wananga, the schools of the trained the Māori tohunga. And these this secret consisted in the knowledge of a supreme god by the name Io. And
wow.
Io was the god above all gods. But the difficulty about this is it's the knowledge the entrepreneur comes from various people who were seeking to find some kind of connections between Maori religion and Christianity.
Right, yeah.
And by placing it there as a secret knowledge, it neatly provided a bridge, if you wanted a bridge. And so these would be people who were trying to find a reconciliation between the two ways of approaching life. Personally, I'm relatively skeptical, but then who knows if knowledge will not come up. It certainly is an old story being told in the 1860s and 70s.
Yeah.
But it is kind of interesting whether, in fact, the Wananga did keep up secret knowledge, which was passed from teacher to student. Perhaps that, I'm sure that was so in some areas.
Mm.
But that mostly would have been about powerful karakia.
Yeah, I'd heard the concept of secret knowledge before. In this instance, it was in regards to the health of the forest and the American scientists coming down to try and help solve Cody Dieback and some of the elders up north having kind of not wanting to impart certain knowledge out of mistrust, and understandably so. I'm not surprised to hear of the potential existence of some sort of secret knowledge.
It's the first rule of anybody trying to study Maori tradition, that you understand that you do not own anything that you learn.
Yeah.
It very much belongs to the people who've chosen to lend it to you on certain conditions.
Yeah, right. Are there people considered sort of experts in the field?
Well, you see, relatively few, but there is such a revival and interest in traditional Maori customs that many people are sort of speculating on the shape and the form of traditional Maori religion. But some of these are quite, they're reshaped by some quite fanciful.
You're breaking up just a little bit there, Peter. Sorry.
Yeah, that's because of a bit of cold. Oh. It's certainly true that I have to be careful what I say, because I will take the scholar's side on some of these subjects, and that's Western scholarship, which is not necessarily Maori, going to be compatible with Maori knowledge.
Mm.
But what I've observed is that there are some people for whom a tradition of Maori knowledge as a key to the way to recover taha Maori is paramount. But there seems to be, along with it, a good deal of speculation in what they're saying. And especially I find that a bit troubling when it presupposes, for example, extras to the mythology that invoke, the great example of this is around the work of Barry Brailsford, who was an interesting man who wrote from Christchurch Teachers College back in the 1990s, and wrote a whole series of books which speculated about the missing South Island tribe called Waitaha, and kind of created a mythology around it. And that's created such a problem for scholarship, because you don't know what's going on and what's being said. And that's why people kind of steer clear of it. But the bit that really interests me is, was there anything in that you could call roughly the equivalent of a temple? Because in the wider Pacific Polynesian world, for example, in Hawaii, there are descriptions, I think Captain Cook has a description, of a huge temple that the Hawaiians had to their principal gods. And it's so interesting thinking of what has happened to the tradition of temple building which seems to have been with Polynesian people before the arrival of the missionaries, and which all these temples were destroyed very rapidly as tribes converted to Christianity and wanted to demolish what they had. Now, there's nothing quite resembling a temple anywhere in New Zealand. We have sacred trees.
Mm.
We have some sacred waters, and so they become a kind of external shrine. One thing that does interest me is, you know, when you go onto a marae and you stand on in the grass in front of the marae, there is a great deal of gulf between the people who are at the meeting house and you sitting as the stranger outside. And that ground is always described as sacred. And it does make me wonder whether in some sense the space, the forecourt of the marae, was the remnant of the old temple. Because if you think of the carved gods on the meeting house, they are looking down on the space. And in some sense, the tribute that's being brought by the Manahiri when they visit is a kind of offering. This is simply my speculation.
Yeah, totally. I wonder if on the another take could be, you know, in terms of, again, coming from sort of Christian angles, where that concept of the church is the people rather than the building.
Yes.
I wonder if there is a similar sort of, a very real embodiment of that. You never know.
Well, possibly, but I think it's more likely that the tohunga is the important person, that the priest carries this, and the priest, if the tohunga is a priest, the tohunga is also the maker of medicine, the holder of knowledge.
Mm.
And maybe the tohunga as priest, wherever the tohunga is, there is the sacred space.
Yeah, you might. Yeah, right. That makes sense too.
And certainly these tohunga were so important in the conduct of Māori tradition. And you see, associated with death and the rites of death and the rites of sickness, and especially where the sickness was deemed to be about to cause death. And nobody could withstand that. And then the tohungas need to conduct the purification rites. All that creates an atmosphere which is nothing like perhaps the religions that we are used to.
Mm.
But they give a shape, just shape, to the people. But it's a religious shape that's so intertwined with life that it's hard to separate it out and say it's purely religious, because it's not.
Mm. Someone's texted in saying, talking about a book called Cannibal Jack. Have you heard of this book?
Yes, I know. That is an interesting book. And books like that, which tell the stories of people who were, you know, the in-between people between Māori and Pākehā, are really significant and may be giving us some kind of knowledge of what their activity was. So, yes, that's an excellent suggestion. And there's been a number of works about those sorts of people who were the interface, the people who stood, you like, halfway between the Māori community and the European community and could intercede and enter both.
Mm.
Now, they're most likely to be able to tell us more about it.
Yeah, look, I think it's something I'd really love to revisit. I wonder if there's a you know, something we could do in terms of one day soon have like a, you know, an expert
that we can both
speak to, yeah, to interview. I'd love that, because
yes.
It's a fascinating topic, and all you and I can do is speculate. So I'd love to.
Precisely.
Yeah,
and
I'd love to speak to somebody.
And let's see what your listeners come up with, because that would be most interesting.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic. Okay, well, you've piqued some interest here, I'm certain. As always, I've got to go too soon, so we've got the news to get on with. But thank you very much, Peter, and I'll relay what we do get from the listeners, because almost certainly we'll get a flurry of texts on this one.
Excellent.
Thank you again. See you soon.
Bye.
All right, we have.